You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I am Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Stevie Nicol. We'll be looking back on today's Premier League games. A little later on, we'll also be looking ahead to Chelsea's game against Aston Villa and addressing their problems as well, as Julian Loren will join us. But right now, we are joined by Shaka Hislop and Don Hutchison. They'll be waiting in on the first game that we'll be talking about today, which is Liverpool against West Brom. It finished 1-1. Liverpool had the chance to go 5 points clear at the top of the table. You can see the shots on goal, many chances created, but big saves from both goalkeepers in this game and lots to get into, starting with Stevie Nicol. A big Sam masterclass, some would say.
Well, listen, if sticking 10 men behind the ball is a masterclass, then yes, but that's really what it was. And we knew how this game was going to pan out. We knew that they were going to put men behind the ball. And then after that, it was, can Liverpool get ahead and then forge further ahead and score more goals? Or will they be tough and resilient and make challenges and maybe cause Liverpool problems on the break? Now, that's how we all saw the game. That's how we all figured it was going to go. Unfortunately for Liverpool, it went the other way. You know, they did score, they did get ahead, but after that, they really didn't put the keeper under too much pressure, to be honest. Just a lot of balls in the box and a lot of scrapping in the box. And then, of course, they get done with the sucker punch. Actually, could have lost two. Alisson made a great save when it was still 1-0. And so they end up losing 2 points. So the way it panned out, the draw, isn't a surprise. It's just a surprise that they never won by 4 or 5.
Well, afterwards, Don, Klopp did say that they were playing against a 6-4 formation, but surely he knew this is how it was going to go against this side.
Yeah, absolutely, Kay. Everyone knew how the game was going to go. That was going to be the system. Sam was never going to go to Anfield, even though he's been there before with Palace and won many years ago. But he was never going to go there with this West Brom side and open up and try and, you know, play the Liverpool way, if you like, at Anfield. Otherwise, they would have got done 6 or 7. So that's the system that Jurgen Klopp would have knew his men were coming up against. They needed to be patient. They got the first goal after 12 minutes. You then thought it was going to be, you know, an easy scoreline, an easy victory. No stress, no drama. But West Brom hung in there. They stayed in the game. They got past half-time. They got to the hour mark. They started to pose Liverpool a threat. Then once Matip went off and Reece Williams come on, no fault of the youngster, they just looked a little bit creaky towards the end. And West Brom were forcing corner after corner after corner. And watching the game, it was one of them movies that you've seen before. And you just thought, West Brom are going to nick something here. And they did. And it was a good point for them. But, you know, it was very negative. But I don't blame them whatsoever playing that style against Liverpool.
Shaka, yeah, as Don just mentioned, corner after corner, Klopp says that they gave far too many corners away in this game, but there seemed to be such a drop-off in the second half from them. Do you think that they expected to just see this through and get the 3 points, and that's why we did see that?
Yeah, it's tough to see exactly what Liverpool were expecting in the second half. Given what you saw from West Brom in the first, where they didn't even bother to leave a man up and it was basically just camped in West Brom's half. I question whether Liverpool expected more of the same and West Brom just to hope for a mistake. But in the second half, they actually left a man up top, so they had an out ball, and Liverpool just didn't adjust and didn't adjust well enough to West Brom, putting them under a little bit of pressure, and I use that term very loosely. But then you come up against a Big Sam team, you know they're going to be physical, you know they're going to be well-versed from set pieces, and that's exactly what happened. happened without being able to adjust to West Brom, maybe without the benefit of Klopp talking the team through at halftime what changes need to be made and how they need to adjust. On the fly, the players just couldn't figure it out. And West Brom knew what they were doing, kept themselves in the game, and then got the reward of that they were hoping from a set piece. Typical Big Sam.
Typical Big Sam. But what about the front three today, Stevie, for Liverpool?
Exactly. You know, listen, we have applauded this front three, patted them on the back, said how brilliant they are, how they can produce something from nothing. And you know what? These are the sorts of games when you have to earn all that praise. You know, it's one thing to go and play in a big atmosphere against one of the big teams and you turn it on and it's razzle-dazzle. But when it comes down to nitty-gritty, Mane, Firmino and Salah, in my opinion, is the reason why Liverpool didn't win the game. Yes, Mane scored a goal, but after that, particularly Salah, who I think he dribbled at an opponent about 15 times and probably stood on it four or five and gave it away, Dip wasn't at it. Bobby Firmino wasn't at it. So, you know, as I started with, if you're going to take all the praise, you better take the criticism, because with the amount of ball the rest of the team got, the three of them, in my opinion, it's up to them to produce. And today, they didn't produce.
OK, well, let's take a look at how the table is looking, because, as I mentioned, Liverpool could have gone 5 points clear with this one. They still do have a nice cushion at the top of 3 points on their neighbours Everton. Then you've got Leicester City and Manchester United behind them with a game in hand as well. Spurs had the chance to go into the top four in their game today. We'll get to that in just a moment. But Liverpool cannot be too upset with the fact that they are still top of the table. 1-1 it finished between Wolves and Spurs. And you can see the stats here in front of you. And it's going to be a story that maybe has been familiar for Spurs this season, if you do remember going back to that Crystal Palace game when they were happy to have a one-goal lead. Maybe they thought they were going to take all 3 points. But Don, was it the fact that they shouldn't have settled for that one goal?
It was just a hard watch, Kay, and you're right, you know, when you revert back to that Crystal Palace game, because the week later, Liverpool smashed them by seven. And it was a hard watch. When you score after just under a minute, you think you're going to go do a good start, you're going to be on the front foot, you're going to take the game to Wolves, you're going to create chances. I mean, you cannot win the league. Jose Mourinho cannot win the league by asking his team to defend for 89 minutes of the game, because the inevitable will happen. Wolves are a good side, and Wolves deserve something out of the game. You give Wolves a bit of possession, you give them possession in wide areas. They've got good players like Pedence and Neto, and, you know, Traore is a threat when he goes forward. And you give them possession, especially in the midfield with Moutinho, who are good technicians. They're going to create chances. And I just found it a real sorry watch if you're a Spurs fan and you score after 60 seconds and then you're defending for 89 minutes of a game trying to win that game 1-0. And they're trying to be title contenders. It ain't going to happen. Not on Jose's watch. Not the way he's having them playing.
Should he know better by now, Shaka, to not sit on a one-goal lead and expect to take all the points?
Well, he should, but we know better than that from Jose Mourinho. You get a one-goal lead against a team. Listen, Wolves are a decent outfit, and that'll be the excuse here. Never mind some of their struggles during the course of this season. Wolves are a decent outfit with some very good players. But this is Jose Mourinho. He'll do this against anybody, never mind away to a decent outfit. You get a goal lead, you know what to expect from there on in. The hard part comes when the goal comes as early as it did today. But again, this is typical Jose Mourinho. You get the lead, you sit back, you defend, you hope you don't make any mistakes, and you dare the opponents to unlock you. And eventually that pressure must tell. Spurs' last shot on target in the game came in the 21st minute. That tells you exactly who Spurs were going to be all evening long. The telling thing for me is in truth, Wolves should have won it. Wolves should have won it very late on. But I guess Jose Mourinho will be happy coming away with a point, given some of their recent results, given who the opponent was. But it's getting tougher and tougher to defend, or try to defend.
Well, there was a lot of criticism today about, well, not so much criticism towards the players, but how Kane and Son were practically doing nothing. Mm. Should we have seen more of them in this game?
To be honest, I don't think we can really start pointing the finger at two of the front players, because the truth is, what's going on behind them has to get them the ball in order for them to succeed. And it's OK when Spurs are playing Liverpool and they're playing the London derbies against the Arsenal and Chelsea. You know, Spurs fans will accept that you sit tight and we'll take breaking. It seems like they've forgotten how to actually get from back to front with good passing, good movement, everybody linking up. It seems that the only way this team can play is if it wins the ball back quickly and catches the opposition and breaks on them. Because other than that, there's no interplay with anybody. That's the strange thing. It's almost like they've forgotten how to do it.
What's pretty strange with Spurs as well is how we've seen them go from top spot. And it's been quite the drop-off in recent games, as you can see here, from their recent results. There were back-to-back defeats going into this game against Leicester and against Liverpool. So they would have liked to have got 3 points under their belt today. But they've been slipping down that table. Don, are they convincing enough for you to go all the way this season with what we've seen recently?
No, I thought there was a period where they could, and I think I got conned into thinking Spurs are going to be title contenders when I seen them beat Man City 2-0, and as Stevie said, there's a genuine plan. When Tottenham were sitting deep, they had people like Son and Kane and Bergwijn, genuine speed to hit teams on the counter, and they'd done that against Man City, and I thought, if this is what Jose is going to do from now at the end of the season against the big sides, I can see the plan and it's working. But Harry Kane can't be enjoying playing in this Tottenham side. He would have been enjoying it a month back when they were sitting top of the league, because the table looks great and he could be potentially, you know, being a Premier League winner. Now, all of a sudden, the drop-off's been so bad and he's not getting any service, he's not getting any chances, and you see him coming deeper and deeper and deeper, just trying to get any touches of the ball. It's not really where he wants to be. You know, he wants to be in the box, creating chances, having assists for Son and getting goals himself. And you know, you can't fault him for what he's being asked to do, the same as Son. But Jose's got to find a way of getting his best players at the top end of the pitch in the game a hell of a lot more.
Thanks very much, guys. To hear more from these three, make sure you go over to our YouTube channel to see Extra Time.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, Chelsea's recent results do not make for good reading, particularly if you are Frank Lampard. It's three losses in their last four. There is that 3-0 win over West Ham in there, but it doesn't get any easier. It's City next weekend. Yesterday, they had the chance to go second in the table, but with how things have turned out and with that 3-1 loss to Arsenal, they've ended up eighth right now. Julien Laurent now joins us. We welcome him in. He was at that game yesterday. What happened to Chelsea, Julian?
They just never turned up, especially in the first half. They did a bit better in the second half when they had more of the ball. But in the first half, it was like they sent their under 23, maybe the under 18, to be fair. There was just no motivation, there was no desire, there was no aggression. There was just nothing. And against a team like Arsenal, who was really under pressure, lost all confidence, if there was one game where you knew that you had to be on your toes and ready for a bit of a fight at the beginning, but then very quickly you could get control, that was that game. Even away from home with no fans, that was that game. And yet they got everything wrong. Frank, I thought, was right to be harsh on his players, but also he has to take some responsibility for the no-show that they had for most of the game.
Don, what do you think's happened to this team? Because it did all seem so promising.
Yeah, it reminded me of that performance of a performance last season against Sheffield United when they were really off it. And I was watching the Sheffield United game last season. I was looking at the clock and I was thinking, 20 minutes gone, Chelsea are not doing anything. Half an hour gone, Chelsea are not doing anything. And it was like that for the whole game. They were so passive. Exactly the same against Arsenal. You know, as Jules said, Arsenal have been in horrendous form in a London derby. You make sure you get your team to start on the front foot, start with loads of aggression, get right in Arsenal's face, get the first goal, and you probably beat them by 4 or 5. And Chelsea were just way off it. That was a bad one for Frank to take. And I think he's got a problem in terms of his two fullbacks, Chilwell and Reece James, both terrific players, but both carrying knocks. He doesn't trust Emerson at left-back, so you had to play Chilwell with a knock, and that didn't work. And Reece James had a knock as well. Maybe he should have started Aspilicueta. So I expect lots of changes for his next game against Villa.
Donny blasted his players afterwards. He said they were lazy. He said he takes responsibility up to a certain point, but that they have to too. What did you make of his comments?
I thought he was spot on. I thought he was absolutely spot on. As, you know, as a manager, yes, you've got to try and protect your players, I think, at times. But sometimes you've got to tell the world, I think, what the fans can see. Fans are not daft. When you watch a game of football, you can see what plan the manager's gone with, and you can see the personnel that he's gone with and the shape. And if you don't see your team trying or putting tackles in or making the effort to close distances and get near people, there's only so much I think you can do as a manager. And Frank will look at himself and Jody will do the same, and they'll analyse where they went wrong in terms of personnel and the formation. But it's up to the players to do a hell of a lot more, because a lot of them were way off the standard of what Chelsea want.
Would you agree with what Don just said, Stevie? Was that the right approach to take from Lampard?
Yeah, I think the timing of it was right, yeah. You can't keep them sheltered, as he said. But I think we all forget, you know, that we look at the team sheet and we look where teams are in the league and we automatically say, well, they're going to win, they're a better team, blah, blah, blah. A huge part of the game was what goes on inside here, is the mental side of the game. Don and I had an old coach called Ronnie Moran who used to say, you know what, see this? This is what runs these legs. You know, the legs do what this tells you. And so if you don't get the mental side of the game right, you're not going to be at it. And that is the only problem that Chelsea have. Chelsea have a good side. They've got an exciting side. They've got players that can score goals. They've got a back line that has shown us that they can be solid. So what Frank has to do is figure out, how does he work with his players on the mental side so that they don't go on the field and start a game or play a game for 45 minutes the way they do? And if he can do that, then they'll be fine. Because they've got talent and they've got ability. So once they sort that out, they'll be fine.
Well, they've definitely got talent. $300 million worth of talent spent. Julian, is he under pressure, Frank Lampard, at this point?
No, it's a long-term project. It's very similar to Arteta. You don't appoint him a year ago, 18 months ago, and give him that amount of money to build the team, to then sack him because they lost 3 out of 4. They're 8th in the table, but they're not that far from second place. Liverpool are a bit further up, but so it's not all lost for them. It's just that they have to go through this difficult patch. They have two huge games coming up now, as we said, against Villa and Manchester City in the next 5 days or 7 days. They just have to react now, and also we will judge how good of a manager he is by that reaction. You know, if he can get those players to react and put on two very good performances in the next 2 games, then I think he will reassure a lot of people. The problem is there's still a question mark over how good he really is, because last year was good for a first season in the Premier League with the squad that he had. Obviously expectations are higher this season because of the money he spent, because of the talent and the quality of this team. Now he has to deliver as well. You know, he can say as much as he wants, oh, I warned the players before the Arsenal game that it was not going to be easy and they let me down. Okay, maybe, but you still made wrong choices at the start of the game in the 11 that you started. Your substitutions didn't really work out, apart from Hudson-Odoi, I guess. But there's still a lot of mistakes that he's made so far this season. So it's also his turn to deliver, not just the players.
Yeah, injury doubts, as we know, in just 48 hours between the games, which means we will be seeing rotations. We asked you, Jules, to give us your possible Chelsea 11 for the game against Villa tomorrow. You've gone for Mendy, Aspilicueta, Zouma, Rudiger, Chilwell, Jorginho and Mount in the middle. Callum Hudson-Odoi, Kai Havertz, Christian Pulisic, and you've got Giroud. Would you like to talk us through why you've made these picks?
Yeah, I think there's two things. One is the fitness side of it, because not everybody can play two games in 48 hours. And then there's also the players who really let or disappointed Frank in that game against Arsenal, who will lose their place in the team because they were so bad. I mean, Timo Werner, that has to stop now. I mean, he's lost all confidence. He's lost everything, all momentum, all confidence, all bearings, everything. There's no point starting him. I even think that Lampard started him for far too long. So Werner will be out. I think in a game like this against Villa, where you need to control the ball, put Kai Havertz in there. But please, please put him in his right position, which is behind the striker. He has to play behind Giroud. Giroud should have come on against Arsenal. I even think he should have started anyway. And then Hudson-Odoi did really well when he came on at halftime. Pulisic has that extra little thing that no one else has in that team. I think Mount has to play. He's his favourite player. You put Jorginho there, who only played 45 minutes against Arsenal, and the back four, Azpilicueta has to come in, like Don said, because Reece James is far from fit. I kept Chilwell at left back because I just don't think they've got anyone else there. And then Thiago Silva at his age can't play two games in 48 hours, so Rudiger will have to come in with Zuma.
Getting the better of Villa is unlikely to be a walk in the park, Don. How do you see the game going?
I think if Frank picks a side that Julian's picked, I think they can do well in the game and take all 3 points, but it's a must. I think when you look at Kai Havertz, and he's been played on the left, he's been played on the right, we all know he's a number 10. But I think the one guy that he would trust in the whole 11 is probably Olivier Giroud. The way Giroud's clever, he reads the game well, his first touch is good, he links the play. And you could see a relationship building between Havertz and the way Giroud plays. But it's not going to be easy, so he's got a job on Frank, and when you're on this sort of run, the last sort of team you want to play in the Premier League, who are really unpredictable and got a couple of games in hand, is Aston Villa, because they're playing some cracking football. So again, like the Arsenal game, the pressure's all on Frank, because no one really gave Arsenal a prayer taking anything out of the game, so they had a free hit, if you like, and the pressure was on Chelsea. Exactly the same scenario in this game, and everyone will be looking what Frank Lampard does. Now, I don't think it's any coincidence, Kay, when you look at people like Ollie, Frank and Arteta, you know, rookie managers, when they're trying to come up with the likes of Guardiola and Klopp and Mourinho, it can't be easy for these young rookie managers. So this is a game, I think, for Chelsea. Worst case scenario, take the point, you know, stop the losses, gather a little bit of momentum and try and move on towards the City game.
And just a note on Giroud, it's 8 goals in 8 against Villa. It's one of his favourite victims, so maybe that will help out in him getting a nod. What do you see happening in this game, Stevie?
I think this will be an open game. I think there'll be goals in this game. But I'd like to say I 100% agree with Jules on Giroud. Not because he's got 8 goals in 8 games, but because of what happened against Arsenal. If you need somebody with his experience, a guy who, as you said, right now is scoring goals, you've got everything you need. You've got an older head amongst younger players that will get them off this rotten streak they're on.
Well, we'll find out more about that tomorrow. But quick break now. Chelsea-Villa, one of those games. And this is the upcoming Premier League schedule. Monday to Wednesday, plenty of football to enjoy this week. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. With the latest in French football, Jules Laurent now joins us to talk about whether it will be Mauricio Pochettino replacing Thomas Tuchel, who was given his marching orders on Christmas Eve. What's the latest there, Jules?
Yes, no, you're right. Pochettino will be the next PSG manager. He will be announced in the next few days. There was just a few more details to be sorted out with his contract and his technical staff. We know that his two main assistants, Jesus Perez and Miguel D'Agostino, will be with him. But there's question mark over his fitness coach, who is one of his two sons, Sebastiano, who he wants to bring to Paris as well, who speaks fluent French, which I think would be a big help, like D'Agostino, by the way, and maybe his goalkeeping coach too. So there's still a few details to sort out there. And also on Thomas Tuchel's side, because the club has to agree a severance package for Tuchel and his staff, which will cost around between 5 and 7 million euros, I'm being told. So again, on that side, more details to be sorted out, but it will be done very quickly, and I think Pochettino then will be announced, will arrive in Paris, and then we'll have a bit of time to prepare for when the players come back from holidays on January the 3rd and then having their first game on January the 6th.
Well, there's obviously a lot of history there between Pochettino and PSG. In Paris, is he being seen as the right fit for the club?
Yes, very much so, the right fit, because of many reasons. The first one, as you said, he used to be a player, he used to be a club captain in Paris, almost 20 years to the day when he will be announced, because he arrived from Espanyol back in January 2001, when he was more towards the end of his career than to the beginning, to be fair. But he had 2.5 really good years in Paris, where he was really loved at the club, by the fans as well. So there's a lot of good memories for him coming back. He's always said that he wanted to come back as a manager, and now 20 years on, he will do so. Also because his identity, I think, is very important for the Qatari owners on why they chose him ahead of Max Allegri, for example, or even ahead of Thiago Motta. They were the three contenders to replace Thomas Tuchel. Pochettino went to Qatar a few weeks ago, had a big interview with the Emir of Qatar, and really convinced them with his ideas, with his philosophy, that the identity of football that he wants to implement to the squad, which I think is something that really seduced the people at the top of the club, including Leonardo. And we know that the tension between Tuchel and Leonardo was one of the reasons why Tuchel was sacked a few days ago. And certainly we'll be looking forward to maybe a stronger relationship between Leonardo and Pochettino. Certainly two people who have, I think, a lot of respect for each other.
And no doubt Pochettino will be looking forward to being at a club with a lot less financial restraints than he had at Spurs. And that leads me on to talking about Lionel Messi, because we are just around the corner from the transfer window reopening. We have just heard from Lionel Messi in his latest interview, didn't give too much away, but would Pochettino coming in at PSG make it an attractive option for him if he is to leave Barcelona?
I think he makes it a more attractive proposition for Messi. You know, one of the Spanish newspapers this morning, the Barcelona newspapers, said that Pochettino could be a key asset in bringing Messi to Paris. What we know is that Leonardo and PSG will certainly try to get him. It won't happen in January, of course not, but in the summer when he'll be a free agent. He said in that interview tonight on La Sexta that he hasn't decided yet if he wanted to stay or to leave. So it's very much 50-50. The door is very much still open for a departure. He could well decide to stay in the end, especially after the elections that will happen at the end of January. And depending on who is the new president and what his team is around him, let's say if Xavi is involved, it's probably very likely that Messi would decide to stay at the club and be with Xavi being involved somehow. However, if it was someone else winning those elections, maybe Messi doesn't fancy staying at the club with them, and then he might decide to go. And then certainly PSG, I think, would be in the conversation with Manchester City and Pep Guardiola, maybe with some MLS club as well, because Messi also tonight in his interview said that one day he wants to play in MLS, and he doesn't know if that will be happening, but he certainly wants to. Very, very interesting. I think we will be talking a lot about Messi in the next 6 months and what he could do, but PSG with Pochettino is certainly more attractive than if he was still Thomas Tuchel, the manager.
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, as you say, Messi can't move just yet, but he can start talking to other clubs in January. You mentioned Manchester City. As you said, that was one of the other clubs that was touted as potentially being an option for him if he is to leave Barcelona. And recently, we've seen him praise Pep Guardiola. Do you think there's anything in this?
Yeah, of course, and we know how close in a way he was to going to Man City last summer. If he'd been able to leave Barcelona on a free for very little money, we know that he had talks with Pep Guardiola last summer, that his dad had talked with Pep Guardiola last summer, that his brother had talks with Pep Guardiola last summer. So he was, you know, they were very close already. They've always been very close, and I think that not just you know, Messi was being honest when he was asked about Pep Guardiola and that incredible relationship they had at Barcelona, the success that they had, obviously, in those 4 years that Pep spent with Messi at Barcelona. And of course, I think if he had the opportunity one day to play again for Pep, and if everything was reunited, I think he will go for it. So I think City, if they can really afford Messi, will be there. I think other clubs will try as well, but certainly with Pep Guardiola, more than PSG with Mauricio Pochettino, Pep Guardiola would be a huge asset to try to attract Lionel Messi to your club.
Absolutely. And then also, you know, it's part of the City group, so maybe he could be a few years at Manchester City, and then maybe it could be NYCFC if he is looking to go to MLS. Is there any clubs that you think he'd have his eye on, or any city he'd prefer to live in?
Well, I think, you know, it's already good that he mentions MLS in an interview like this and over his future. I think it would be an incredible signing, of course, for any MLS franchise. But you have to look at the big names, whether that's LA Galaxy, whether it's New York, because of that link with the City Group. It could be Miami as well, and David Beckham, of course, who, as a young club, and, you know, maybe can have a better plan or a longer plan to one day attract Lionel Messi to their club. I think it'd be very interesting to see who can position themselves to get Messi to the US. I think if you're MLS and Messi opens the door like he did tonight, I think in the next 4 to 5 years maximum, you do everything you can with whoever you can to try to get the potentially the greatest player of all time to your league, which, regardless of how old he is, when this happened, it would be incredible for MLS and for soccer in the north of America. So I think now that he's opened the door, I think MLS should go all guns blazing to try to get Messi to whatever club they can.
You do wonder about his immediate future, though, Jules, because in this interview, he hasn't given too much away. It should come as no surprise that he did criticise Bartomeu again and everything that's gone on in recent history at Barcelona. But he also hasn't ruled out staying there and spoke about how much he loves the city, how much he loves the club, how he's been in Barcelona longer than he was in Argentina now. So what do you think is going to happen with him this summer?
I think he wants to stay. I think personally, as much as I would love him in Paris, I think deep inside he wants to stay. Of course, the only reason why, or not the only one, but the main reason why he wanted so desperately to leave last summer, and he said again tonight in that interview how sad he was, how hurt he felt, you know, how many times he cried. It was because mostly of Bartomeu and how that club was run. I mean, I said many times on the show that Bartomeu almost killed FC Barcelona for me in all those years. I mean, his tenure was an absolute disgrace, and I think that almost drove Messi away. But I think if all the conditions are there, let's say if Joan Laporta, who was very close to Messi, or if Victor Font, who can bring Xavi with him, either of them win the elections, for example, I think he would be very tempted to stay, especially if they have a proper plan for the next few years, where they say to him, listen, this is the plan. This is what we're going to do. We're going to have a team around you that is much better than the team that he had in recent years. You're going to win the Champions League again. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And if you have that project, if you have that plan for him, there's nothing more than staying in Barcelona. Like already he's saying tonight, even if I leave, I will come back one day because this is where I want to live. This is my city. You know, this is my club. And of course, he said Barcelona is bigger than any player. And him included. But he also said that that's where he wants to go back. So I think deep inside he wants to stay. And if the project is right, he will stay. Depends as well who is the manager. I'm not sure if Ronald Koeman stays. He will want to be part of that. But let's say someone else comes in and maybe he will be more happy to stay. I think there's a lot of conditions to be there for him to stay. There's also a lot of conditions for him to leave. But deep inside, surely he wants to be at his club forever. And he wants that to be his main club. Let's not forget 20 years ago, and there was an amazing article on the website, on our website, about 20 years ago when he signed for Barcelona as a 13-year-old on that restaurant napkin. And that story is incredible, and I'm sure that he would want to stay in that club only for the rest of his career now.
Yeah, obviously where his heart is. Well, no doubt this will be one of the topics on the Gab and Jules excellent podcast. That and all the biggest topics every Monday and Thursday. Make sure you join them tomorrow. Don Hutchison will be with them. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Serie A will be back on January 3rd. It is exclusively here on ESPN, and there is quite the title race going on at the top there. You can see these games across the network. Inter Crotone will be on ESPN2 on January 3rd with Mark Donaldson and Matteo Bonetti. And Matteo Bonetti is also on the Serie Awesome podcast with myself, Nikki Bandini and Mina Rizzuchi. That drops every single Wednesday. Make sure to download it with your ESPN podcast. That's it for the latest edition of the show, though. We thank Stevie, Shaka, Don, and also Jules. We'll be back again soon with more football coverage. See you then. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Stevie Nicol is with me, Kate Murray, and we do have Don and Shaka back with us. Let's get started with some of your questions. Tommy Finn asks Stevie, is Big Sam bad for football?
You can ask the same thing. The question could be, is Jose Mourinho bad for football?
But is this Big Sam bad for football?
No, I don't see how Big Sam's bad for football. Listen, look, not everybody can go out and buy a team. That would be the easiest way to explain it. So some teams have to have players with inferior ability, and then they have to make up with either the tactics or just brute force and strength. So, no. Listen, you need all kinds in football. Big Sam just so happens that he has a more defensive approach. But you know what? Sometimes you have to do what you have to do to win a game. So, no. Listen, here's another one. Do you actually want, because I don't want to go and watch Leeds United playing against another Leeds United team. Because that's not football to me. That's like watching a schoolboy game where everybody's just running around at 100 miles an hour, just all over the place. That's not football to me.
Well, it's going to be flowing football, loads of goals, lots of excitement.
And lots of losing the ball. And if you enjoy watching teams losing the ball, then you're not my cup of tea.
All right, then. I'll just leave that first one with you. It's actually you next as well, Stevie. It's from your throwing coach. It says, Stevie, can you show us the face you made when Joel Matip got injured today?
It wasn't so much the face. It was what I said.
I don't know if you're allowed to say that on this show.
No.
It's a family show.
No. I mean,
you give
it was a diluted
version?
It was along the lines of, is this guy ever going to play a series of games in a row? Because this guy plays... I think he's played two in a row so far this season without getting injured. I think that's about it, isn't it?
But then weren't you a bit more worried for what it means for Liverpool with all the injuries they've already got?
Yes, well, listen, Liverpool's biggest and only real problem with all these injuries is what's going to happen when teams like West Brom break on you just to try and upset you. Because the young guy, Williams, doesn't really have the pace to recover when the ball's in behind him. And as great as Fabinho has been, the goal that Liverpool actually lost would be the one area where you need a specialised centre-backs in the air, like Gomez and Van Dijk. So Matip getting injured is a huge problem, again.
Would you say the same, Don, that Matip getting injured is a big problem for them? They've done well so far with the injuries they've had.
I'm still reeling over Stevie comparing Leeds playing Leeds. That sounds like the best game I would ever have seen in a million years. No. It sounds like a 10-9 game. No. It sounds like that would be 10-9. If you had said Leicester versus Leicester or Man City versus Man City, I get it, but not Leeds. They're amazing.
Amazing, you haven't had you have it. No, you have it. No, you have it. No, we'll have it. No, get in there. No, we'll have it. You have it.
What's the final score?
What's the final score?
Leeds won 10-9.
Hold on, right, here's a question for you, Don. Have you ever enjoyed a 0-0 game?
Yeah, because you can have good 0-0 games.
Right, so what's it got to do with the score? You can have a bad 9-9. Just horrendous defender.
How can you have a bad 9-9?
Horrendous defender.
How can you have a bad 9-9?
Horrendous goalkeeper. Horrendous defender.
Stop it, Stevie.
Would he like to be a goalkeeper?
Stop it, Stevie.
For Leeds against Leeds.
Sure, that's a belter. That's a question.
I'll tell you what I heard. Stevie said he'd prefer West Brom against West Brom than Leeds against Leeds. That's what I heard.
That's what he heard.
Your filter's blocked. Shaka, you need to change your filter.
In 30 years of football, I've never heard anyone say that was a bad 9-9.
Fair point. But actually,
there's never been a 9-9, so that's why.
Right, football Wikipedia.
Well, there's never been a 9-9, so that's why you haven't heard it.
Don, Henry would like to know, where is a good landing spot for Thomas Tuchel?
Oh, great question. Does he go back to Dortmund? Would Dortmund have him back? If Arteta carries on in the form that he's been on in the last couple of months, Arsenal? I'd love to see him in the Premier League. I'd love to see the Mad Professor in the Premier League. I'm going to toss up between Dortmund and Arsenal.
All right. Xhaka, will Chelsea make the top four?
Right now, I'm thinking no. I'm thinking Chelsea are making a lot of their own problems. From, Frank Lampard, I think he's right to question a lot of his players in particular, given their performance yesterday. But especially with Werner kind of struggling and then him making excuses for those struggles, I'm not sure that they can pick back up where they left off. Maybe when Ziyech comes back, things turn around. But as of right now, that's a huge ask on Ziyech as well.
Stevie, what do you think? With all that money spent, surely they can make the top four, can't they?
Yes.
All right, Don. Well,
who's going to beat them? Who's going to knock them out at?
Well, who? Yeah. Don.
Well, nobody. That's why I said yes.
I think so, Kay. I think if you look where Everton were 4 games ago, outside the top four, drifting, not playing well, not winning games, you thought, Everton have done. They just won 4 games on the spin and they're sitting in second. There's no reason why Chelsea can't hit that sort of form.
OK, so 2 against 1 for whether Will Chelsea make it.
Hold on, to Stevie's question. Sorry, to Stevie's question as to who's going to keep them out, you've got Liverpool, the 2 Manchester clubs, you've got Leicester, right, Spurs, question mark, but they're good teams in the league. It's not just a foregone conclusion that, there's 17 poor teams and just 2 or 3 good ones.
I never said it was a foregone conclusion.
So who misses out?
Well, not Chelsea.
That's an easy
Man United, Man United, Chelsea, City and Liverpool is your top four.
All right. Stevie, Frank McManaman said, how important are assistant coaches in the success or failure of a club, not including throwing coaches? He says, was Paul Mariner really that important to you in your success at the Reds?
Yes, 100%. Listen, you can't do it on your own. You can't. And you need somebody next to you who actually has an opinion. Having a yes man's no good. If I turn around to Paul and say, well, you know what? I'm going to play him over him. What do you think? And he goes, no, yeah. Oh, absolutely, yeah. I don't want that from him. I don't want that all the time. I need somebody who's going to turn around and say, well, so why are you going to play him over him? And talk it through. And he'll say, well, you know what? I would play him over him. And so then it's my decision. But you need somebody to talk things through with and give you ideas. Substitutions. I'll be sitting in a game. Could be 0-0, could be 1-1, could be 2-1 up. Do you go and try and win the game outright, kill the game, or do you just keep what you have? So you need to be able to turn to somebody and have another voice and another opinion. And then, because I'm the head coach...
What if it's 9-9?
Then I decide. Well, I think if it's 9-9, I may as well sit in the stand, because obviously nobody's listening to a word they've been saying.
Surly Traveller, Don, would like to know, how much were Liverpool missing Thiago's creativity and final third passing against West Brom? They seem to lack ideas against a team that were defending with 11 in the box.
I think that's absolutely fair, and the same could be said about the Fulham game as well when they drew that 1-1. You know, when teams are so defensive and sitting off and having numbers behind the ball, you need someone that's going to pick that, you know, that brilliant pass, a pass that probably Gini Wijnaldum or Jordan Henderson doesn't see, because he is a genius, Thiago, and Liverpool need him back. It's difficult to say, but if you ask me if Thiago played in the Fulham game and the West Brom game, I'm pretty sure Liverpool would have won him.
A player like Thiago brought in for these type of situations, Stevie, among everything else he offers?
Oh, 100%. I agree with Don. Absolutely, 100%. You know, that as good as he's talking about Wijnaldum and Henderson, Curtis Jones, maybe in a couple of years, could turn into that guy that can pick that pass. But, you know, when you're sitting, 25 yards out, and you've got 9 or 10 men in front of you, it takes a lot of experience, a lot of touch, a lot of understanding of the game to pick out a gap or pick out a player. Thiago absolutely would have made a huge difference.
Oh, yeah, it's looking like he'll be back very soon as well. Last question is from Michael Lizzie, AC Milan Michael. Xhaka, what would be each of the pundits' favourites, player slash present for their former teams during the January window? And we know Don's got a few to choose from here, so pick your favourite former team.
Is this me or is this Xhaka?
I'll go with West Ham. I'll go with West Ham, and my Christmas present to them is a fully fit, fully firing Michael Antonio for the rest of the season. No missed games, no injuries, no weeks off.
I think Michael Antonio.
You see West Ham back to their best.
You've got a choice of anybody in the transfer window, and you're going to go with Michael Antonio. No offence to Michael Antonio. You know what? There's a guy called Messi available. There's going to be a guy called Messi available, maybe. I think I would rather take him over Michael Antonio. Xhaka.
Not even Santa Claus could get Messi to go to West Ham.
Tevez and Mascherano.
You just took it right out my mouth.
Maybe. You got the dream.
Look what happened there.
Don, who's your club and what's your wish?
Well, Newcastle's my club, and I just wish we played like Leeds. Because give me Leeds losing 6-2 against Man U every day of the week and actually having a go. And when you're 6-2 down, actually throwing bodies forward in the last minute like it was the first minute, over the way Newcastle just completely folded against Man City. And then I heard Steve Bruce saying my remit is to stay in the division. Is that what Newcastle have become? Is that what we've become since Kevin Keegan in 95-96, just staying in the division? Can't we go to Man City and have a go? Can't we do that? And if we get beat 4-2, we get beat 4-2. But have a go doing it. Callum Wilson was on the bench last night. Andy Carroll was on the bench. Dwight Gayle on the bench. Go there and have a go, man.
Do you know what? I owe Don an apology.
Go on.
Well, because I'll be honest with you, Don. If I had to sit and watch Newcastle every week, I'd rather watch Leeds against Leeds as well. So I do apologise.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
I take it all back.
That was his plan, to actually make
it all
say
back.
That.
I'm sorry.
Go on, you then. Liverpool.
Messi. Tell you what, if we had Messi today, we would have beat West Brom.
You would have unlocked that defence.
Absolutely. If you can get Messi, get Messi.
All right, if you can get Messi,
so Liverpool
get Messi.
Needs
well,
West,
you know,
Liverpool needs Messi to beat West Brom.
Listen, Xhaka, you know the old adage, when you're at the top, that's when you strengthen, right?
Oh, well, that would be definitely strengthening, Stevie.
There you go.
Don't forget, you can get much more content over on YouTube, and ESPN FC is with you daily here on ESPN Plus. Dan Thomas, my old friend.
Don Thomas.
Dan Thomas.
Well, that's his brother.
He'll be back tomorrow, and I hope he'll say my name properly. More Premier League games to discuss.